Hello, hello. Welcome to Listen to Love. My name is Julia Pieper. I'm a yoga teacher trainer, massage therapist, and empowerment coach. I created Listen to Love to connect you to your inner voice of love. We all know it. So often in our everyday life, we listen to this inner voice of fears, insecurities, doubt, and whatever unpleasant thing there is going on inside of you. And that's why I find it so healthy to create this channel to really tune you on this frequency, this inner frequency of love. Today, I'm so glad to have a very special guest on the show, Byron de Marsay. We have been practicing yoga together in Bali in the beginning of the year. And interestingly, the topic of our conversation just matches perfectly the place where we have been recording it, which is Bali, the heart chakra of the earth. And actually, it's also really suitable to release this conversation right now while I'm in the middle of the preparation for my healing heart retreat happening here in Portugal at the coast in August this year. So we are actually speaking about the heart. We're speaking about how and why it makes sense to open our heart and keep it neutral at the same time. We're speaking about masculine and feminine energy, receptivity versus listening, the answers that we can find in yoga philosophy to what it truly means to listen. We're speaking about intuition, instinct, and intention and how they're interconnected. And yeah, all in all, it's a really inspiring conversation that I really, really, really highly recommend listening to and really enjoying it, taking the best out of it. We are speaking about how Bali can teach us how to love ourselves and, I mean, how and why it can be so empowering to look back into our childhood to find answers to what is it, what we really, really want, where we want to move to. We're speaking about purification of heart and mind and why there's so much beauty and depth in saying goodbye. We would really love for you to be inspired and be empowered by listening to this and just enjoy.
Listen to the wind and listen to the water, hear what they say.
So yeah, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for being here. Before we jump right into it, I just want to refer to what you say in your WhatsApp status, which is instinct and intention is intuition. And this podcast, Listen to Love, is so much about connecting to this inner voice of love, connecting to intuition. And I mean, you can choose if you want to talk about what you mean by saying this first, or if you want to guide us into a little meditation first. It's all about what you feel now.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the podcast. And as I think about that, I just remember I wrote that because I was feeling inspired. And something for me that's always been a big deal is following my intuition. And then what is the intuition though? Where does it live? And is it in your brain? Is it in your spleen? Is it in your gut? Is it in your heart? but I think, you know, the more deep you dive into spirituality at its core, it has to do a lot with your intention. And then if you act on instinct, it has to do with moving forward. So if you set an intention, and that is where you're going, for example, and then you follow your instinct, you'll be moving in the right direction. Mm. And so intuition would just be that. So yeah, let's take a moment. And if you are able to find a comfortable seated position, please do that. And if you are able to close your eyes safely, please do that. Otherwise, you can keep the eyes open and just feel into what we call the breath. And we'll anchor in two directions. today. We can call one the positive and one the negative. Then we'll anchor in a third, which isn't so much a direction. I'll explain that in a second. So inhale. And exhale, release. Nice, feeling into vertical connection. So positive charge from the crown of your head all the way up to the sky, past the sky to the stars, sun, moon, all the stars. There's a connection like an antenna connecting you to the higher realms, higher purpose, higher self, higher soul. Now keep that connection. Take a deep breath in and clear that. Nice. And then the negative charge will be, you can think sacrum or roots, something at the base of your spine connecting to the roots of the earth and beyond the roots of the earth. And keep growing the tentacles even further and further and further into the soil. You pass the soil into what might be considered the hot center of the earth. As we anchor downwards into the negative charge, take a deep breath in and let it go. And so from this positive and negative charge, a neutral charge. Let's do this in the body. You could have the heart, and you call it the center of your being, a neutral charge. So whether that means feeling open in your heart, ready to receive, or maybe more of the perspective of releasing, and just allowing the heart to be exactly how it is, which is the compass, and where that intention lives. Okay, let's take one more deep breath in. Hold your breath this time. Hold the breath and then just trust that the map and the blueprint is all set up for the highest good of all. We can sip in a little bit more air and then exhale, let it go. All right, and may we keep this in our field as we practice life today. Namaste.
Thank you so much. That was so beautiful.
You're welcome.
So I really loved what you were saying before, speaking about that inner voice of love, how we can connect to it, and reminds me of a conversation that I had recently with a very good friend. When I was asking him, how do you experience, or what do you think God is? And then he said, God for me is a gut feeling. It's God and gut. He thinks that it's not so far away, these two words, that it's just a little bit of a letter that changes. Yeah, I think that connects really nicely to what you just said. So it's super interesting, and that's why I'm so passionate about hosting this podcast, to explore what this inner voice of love is, what intuition is, and how we can actually find it, especially in times of turbulence when life is challenging us. So for now, the first question that I ask my listeners, or that I ask my guests, is, when was the last time that you listened to that inner voice of love, and which action followed? So we have a lot of voices in our head. Sometimes it's the voice of fear that is guiding us. Sometimes it's the voice of, I don't know, insecurity or whatever. So when was the last time that you just remember right now that you were actively listening to that inner voice of love, and which action followed?
Well, I'm absorbing the question and the way you're talking about the subject. And what I'm picking up on is that the inner voice of love is something that you've been talking about with other people as well, and that it's a defined thing within your podcast and within you and your understanding. So for me, I'm trying to put that framework of what I believe that you mean by the inner voice of love into the framework of how I understand energy and life. So to me, the inner voice of love is something that I think about the polarity of that. So like the inner voice of hate or indifference, the inner voice of numbness, the inner voice of fear, whatever that opposite is, and how the mind is oftentimes what we defer to as the voice, because it's chattering. And a lot of the yoga sutras are about that, you know. Chitta Vritta Nirodha, the first sutra, has to do with your mind chatter. So discerning, which means to judge well, or to, you know, basically know the pros and the cons and weigh the costs and benefits of things, is like of the mind. And like, is this coming from my mind? Is it coming from my heart? So that's the first thing I sense in that way, is like, it becomes people lie to themselves, is what I'm getting to. We're just lying to a lot of people. We're just lying to, we're all lying to ourselves somewhere, probably somewhere. But like some people are just, that's it. They don't really have access to truth. Yeah. So I think to ask somebody when they were following their inner voice of love, you know, I think it would be important also to be like, when have you felt your inner voice of followed your inner voice of love and it was amazing? And like, that was bad, like such a epic experience. And when have you also followed your inner voice of love and it turned out terrible? And then people start to learn, like, what is the inner voice of love actually?
Yeah.
So they get their truth instead of what their mind thinks it is. Cause a lot of, you know, you can just follow that relationship all the way until you're like, you know, in a dangerous situation, because it's not a good one. It was not the right voice to follow. So I think that's part of what life is.
Yeah.
There's a reason so many of the teachers on this planet that people really listen to are like obsessed with language. You know, that's why when I am asked a question, I'm like, what is the language behind that? Like, really, what's the core essence? So for me, if I'm going to go with the good experience that I followed, probably be coming to Bali. yeah, I mean, coming to Bali in 2019, the pandemic was right around the corner. You know, Brian Kest, my good friend and mentor, I taught at his studio for 9 years in Santa Monica, California.
Yeah.
And this amazing, epic place was coming to a close in 2019, June.
Wow.
So it kind of put me at a crossroads of, do I want to keep doing this in LA? Do I want to go somewhere else? I felt so empty without that place. That place was very special. So wow, what a blessing for the timing of that. Because had it not closed, I still would have been in LA. I would have been really lost when COVID happened. So personally, like, that was a gift. So following that instinct, and really the issue there, the not issue, but the obstacle that was in the way was my emotional attachment to all things Los Angeles. Name it friends, name it a couple family members, name it career, familiarity. I was really attached to power yoga, the emotions that ran through there for 30 years. And like, I had an opportunity. Brian was presenting me an opportunity to run the studio. He just couldn't do it. He wanted to close it. But he's like, if you want to run it, I'll give you that opportunity. By the way, it's not going to be a pretty easy transition at first. Like, this thing's in a hole. It's going to need some love. So that inner voice of love that I was trying to figure out, well, is this love? Is this love? Is Bali the love choice? Or is Los Angeles doing this, what feels like the most epic opportunity of my life is presenting, feels like that. But as I look in further and further, I realize my emotional attachment to that is unhealthy. So that inner voice, I could have looked at both of those as the inner voice of love. But I think had I taken the route of Los Angeles, I wouldn't have chosen Bali. As many people know, you tie yourself into a lease on a business of an expensive plot of land, you're kind of married now. You're marrying your next 20 years of your life, if it's successful. But you're aiming for it to be successful.
So
there's a perfect real life example of when I could have chosen either way and thought I was going with love. But one of them was, if I did the work, the inner work, and really sat with it and didn't just like, oh, that's love, No, that was fear. Mm-hmm. One was obviously fear if you did the work. Mm-hmm. The other one was love.
Yeah, it's really beautiful how you say that, because sometimes it's really hard to detect what is actually love. Because what you said in the beginning, and I can really relate to that, is sometimes you think this is love and it turns out terrible, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why I find that so beautiful how you said it in class once. Open up your heart, but keep it neutral. Mm-hmm. And I could take away a lot from that, because I'm very good falling in love, mm-hmm. but I'm also very, very good at heartbreaks. Mm-hmm. and I'm sometimes wondering, I'm a bit tired of living life in that intensity, and I'm feeling like, wow, this is something I can really take away from that. Mm-hmm. And I can also relate a lot with what you said with regard to the studio, because I had a similar offer in Germany just before moving to Portugal, in a studio where I was teaching, and I loved the place. The owner was also offering me to guide the studio, and she was saying, I don't see anyone else within all the teachers that could actually do it. And I felt very honored and tempted. Mm. But as you said, then I was trying to see myself in a couple of years, and I really didn't see myself doing this. Mm. And I'm so grateful I didn't, because of all the admin work that goes along with running a studio. And to be honest, then I think it's also very important to trace it back. What is it what I really, really want? Mm-hmm. And if I trace that back, it's I want to teach. I want to practice, and I want to teach, mm-hmm. share the practice, and not like running a studio. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this podcast because I like to speak about with interesting people. Mm-hmm. So that's also not teaching in that way, but also teaching somehow, because it's so somehow passing on the wisdom in other ways than physical. Mm-hmm. Making it accessible also for people who are maybe lying in hospital right now and can't move but can listen. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to truly listen?
Mm. What?
What does it mean to truly listen?
Mm. I really love that question, mainly because of my life experience with listening and my yoga journey and how that affected my awareness to listening and increased my ability to listen, and then even to evolve my understanding and teach people how to listen. So I remember my first yoga class, being in there and just being like, wow, this is cool. And I was like, but I also am in a room full of people and the teacher's not demoing, and I was forced to be like, what's it? What is this? Like, I have to rely on what they're saying and telling me to do. I could hear them a little bit, but I was really disconnected from yoga movements and positioning and bending this knee and the left and the right. And I was also like, gosh, look at that person. Oh, look at that person. Well, look at that. What'd they say? It was very and then that was actually it got way better over time, but that lasted for a while. Like, I would just keep showing up and be like, why am I so terrible at following this experience? And so I started to look at that. Like, maybe I'm ADD. I mean, that's what they said when I was a kid, like ADHD. Surely that's what it is. Like, just too much going on in here. And then I just really took it upon myself. I picked up a book called Intuition. I was younger than I am now. I was 23. I just was at post-college, diving into spirituality without really calling it that. But picking up a book called Intuition, picked up the Eckhart Tolle book, Power of Now, maybe did some Wayne Dyer, then Abraham Hicks, Asking It Is Given. And they all just contributed on a non-linear path of understanding myself better. And listening was my issue. I was just like, whoa, what is that? Now I understand that much differently than I do then. I'm masculine, feminine, polarizing, extrovert, introvert. I look at it differently. But back then I was just like, I'm a shit listener and I need to get better at that. So I would just make that my goal when I showed up to yoga. And as I listened and I was like, I can follow, I got better. And I closed my eyes. I listened a little better when my eyes are closed. Wait, this ujjayi breath, the sound of my breath, ocean breath, is really working for me. Like, I'm going to get there early 5 minutes today and just ujjayi breath. Leave me alone. Don't talk to me. You know, get focused. And that became what my yoga practice was really about. The more I could focus, the better I felt afterwards. The more I would manifest. Email would come in I was waiting on, or I'd get that phone call. You know, you're at that age where you need a big break, you feel like, in life. And like you're waiting on it. You put out all these different lures to this job and that job. And where are you going to land? Where are you going to live in 6 months, you know? And so it felt like my mind could just disconnect the more I focused from that other stuff. And then when I came back to, quote unquote, the real world of those things, oftentimes I'd have that email sitting in the inbox where that message would come in. I was like, there's something crazy happening here. Can't explain it. Can try to tell my friends about it, but they won't even care. So I'm just going to keep doing it. And then over time, and eventually, you know, I'm a yoga teacher now and whatever you want to call this job, facilitator of sorts. I share yoga. That's my preference. And that my style has been curated as I look at the way I teach now. It's very language, precision cueing, simplified, follow me with your eyes closed, have a blindfold on. As long as you have a certain threshold of listening ability, my classes are meditative, but still strong and flowy, and they can be fast too. But yes, I still get people in there that were in that stage like I used to be in their first class. They're just that they don't have the abilities, not there. The awareness isn't there yet. So they have to have that first moment of, why is this so hard for me? And then, wow, isn't that interesting? Instead of like, oh man, I suck. I'm not supposed to do this. And then that don't show back up. Yeah. So that's the neutral heart, actually. The neutral heart is actually a neutral mind. It's both. They're connected. So when you're feeling neutral, you don't fall in love or hate anything. Okay, so that person who compliments you, you might have that spend that lovely evening with, you don't just create a story in your head that feeds into some illusion you've created, or some samskara, as we call it in yoga, or a trauma, as they say in psychology. You know, so then you stay neutral. So you're able to kind of have a distance and look at things more objectively to see if they actually, what is the actual, you know, as you say, following your heart, or, you know, you're saying like, what does that actually mean? So anyways, listening to me is now receptivity. It's evolved into the word receptivity. So listening is cool, but receptivity is happening while I'm talking to you, right? Receptivity is feminine by nature. So I'm receiving. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say next. I'm not a broken record, but I'm receiving information from you as I give information. So I'm staying receptive. So listening has more to do with an energy than it does your ears. You can listen to the vibration of the insects. You might be able to hear that on the podcast. I'm not sure, but there's tons of Bali bugs in the morning that are just like making you waking up, and you're absorbing the vibration from that. On a smaller frequency, the trees are emitting something, you know, and science could probably prove that. I can't even trace that with my ears. But we feel good when we're in nature, you know, so there's some feedback there. So to me, listening is about feedback. It's about feedback. Like, what is the feedback happening? If I'm in a restorative yoga class or yin yoga class, what's the feedback from the song that's being played? What's the feedback from me getting really still? What's the feedback? You know, they say that, you know, like when you say something or a sound comes out, that sound is still happening somewhere. Like maybe it's in the atmosphere of Earth. Maybe it's gone to outer space. Maybe it's bounced off of 8,000 trees over time. And it's like, found its way into the earth and been absorbed by the earth. And like, maybe the earth is now, you know, doing something with that sound. I don't know what, but that's very interesting, because like, as sound goes into your ear right now and you listen to my voice and you're listening to me too, that's happening inside of you in a way. So what is being affected from the way I'm saying what I'm saying, the words, the actual content, how fast I'm saying it, that's more receptivity than it is listening. So I think receptivity is like, if you just stay neutral again, like you're going to enhance your receptivity. And then you won't be so, gosh, I didn't hear what you said. Oh, what'd you say? No, you got the transmission. If you ever watched a movie or listened to a song, songs are maybe better for this, but for me, like, you don't remember the lyrics or like this, you can't quote everything necessarily, but you know, like if somebody said, watch that movie, you know, if you want to watch it again, all right, you remember if you liked it or not. All right. that's what kind of like receptivity is. Mm-hmm. It's not so much in the brain. Mm. So yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, I can definitely relate. And it's really funny that so listening was initially what made you curious about yoga. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was similar to me and it still is somehow. Sometimes if people ask me, what do you want for Christmas or for your birthday? I say, I want to learn how to become a better listener. Mm. And I want world peace. This is two things I mainly want.
Nice.
But I never saw it in that way that it's a feminine, it's about receptivity and about a very feminine energy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep on exploring that aspect as well. It's very beautiful to see it.
So it goes back to Krishnamacharya, who you might call the father of modern yoga,
mm-hmm.
because he was Hatha yoga, brought Hatha yoga more to the Western world. Not directly, but his students did. Patabi Joyce created Ashtanga yoga. Vinyasa comes from that. Then you have this Iyengar guy, very physical. But their teacher was this guy, Krishnamacharya. And he was all about like the essence of yoga. So the inhale and the exhale are related and directly connected to masculine and feminine, or negative, positive, mm-hmm. depending on how you want to use language. The inhale would be the negative or feminine charge.
Mm-hmm.
And the exhale would be the masculine or the positive charge.
Mm-hmm.
So you just break it down in energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have innate receptivity on the inhale.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have strength on the exhale. Mm-hmm. You go further as to say the inhale is receptivity from strength from above.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of like as I said in the meditation. And then the exhale would be strength from below.
Mm-hmm.
So receptivity is feminine. By nature, it is not just feminine, slightly, it is the embodiment of feminine, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we are in our heads, in our brains, or what we're thinking a lot, specifically fast or strategizing, this would be blocking our ability to receive, be receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. And for those who don't know Hatha, because now that you spoke about Krishnamacharya, mm-hmm. Means sun, moon.
Mm.
Which also represents sun represents male energy and moon represents feminine energy, which shows again how beautifully everything is connected, right?
Mm.
And
yeah,
and that we are always working with polarities. I said about this quote that I quoted you saying, "Open up your heart, but keep it neutral," which also kind of can prevent us eventually from bouncing. From this ever bouncing craziness between raga and dvesha, they say in yogic philosophy, between like and dislike, which kind of maybe drives us crazy at times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because we are kind of maybe even conditioned to move through the world, always thinking, I like this and I don't like this. And I think that sometimes this can also hold us back from listening to love, because when we are constantly in that judging mode, it can really bring us out of our center and disconnect us from our intuition.
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to become when you were a child? You asked that in the empowerment class,
yeah.
And I really like that question. And reminded me back of like me wanting to become a rope dancer. And then at some point I realized actually maybe I am a rope dancer in a way. So what did you want to become?
So I remember that class because the theme of that class was growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, it'd be a good question to ask somebody if we're going to go into growth more, expansion, whatever you want to can kind of put alongside growth. And I was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you want to be? What do you still want to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's get into our imagination and that time frame again. Me personally, I was raised on a cattle ranch in Oklahoma, rural country, just quite a picturesque, some of you probably had that experience too that are listening, but most people just had a friend that had that experience. It was cool. You know, it was very different. I wasn't like into it at the time, but looking back, I was like, wow, now I crave that
mm-hmm.
type of quietness,
mm-hmm.
Expansiveness. So, you know, I was being groomed in a way to be a cattleman, to be taking over the ranch and work with, you know, whatever I did through the years, fixing fences, run the cattle chutes. It's not the stuff that like the yoga world is into. It's the opposite.
Yeah.
And then I remember in second grade, they asked us what we wanted to be when we grew up. And we're going to have this assembly where we sing a song and like, oh, there's 30 people who want to be teachers. Great. Those 30 kids get up there at one time and they sing a song about their teacher. Then 8 of you want to be policemen. Okay, great. You do that. 10 of you want to be doctors. You 10 sing this song together. And 2 of us want to be firemen. So I chose fireman, but that was just because my friend, his grandpa was a fireman and he wanted to be one. I was like, I guess that would be that too. And I had this fire hat. So I did that. Uh-huh. Actually then evolved into like, I want to be a pre-vet. Major in college. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'll work with animals. Maybe that resonated from my past with being around animals so much. My dad was a doctor. I was like, maybe I have it in me to do more school, but I wasn't a good student. Mm-hmm. I was a pretty terrible student. But I was a pretty good student of life, and my communication skills were, little did I know I had a lot of ability there, but at that time, but my writing skills were really good. And that was something I could like really hang my hat on if I wanted to be like, you know what? I really know how to write. Nobody had to teach me that. I was reading hundreds and hundreds of books when I was 7. Mm-hmm. So I started to, I'd say like, that's kind of what resonated. If I had to look inward more, if I knew how to do that more at the time, I would have said, I want to be a writer of some sort, a journalist, a sports writer. I love sports. Still do. Which is interesting because a lot of writers gravitated to my classes because of probably the attention to the detail of language.
The voicing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yoga poetry.
Yeah. So I probably need to start writing that book. Start writing more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, now that you say it, I also remember, and it's maybe inspiring for you as a listener also to connect to, usually throughout the different phases of our childhood, there is different things that we wanted to explore. And that's also connected to the different aspects of our personality and the different aspects of love and how we want to experience love in our most authentic and true self. So now that you say it, there is pictures of me when I was a little girl, maybe like 4 years old, putting a rope on the floor and then with an umbrella and a bathing suit trying to balance on that.
Yeah.
But I remember in 9th grade, I did in high school, I did an internship at a vet. At a vet because I wanted to become a vet. And then in high school, I was also really good at writing. I was terrible at maths, but really good at writing. And then my German teacher was always saying, okay, one day you become an author. And like everybody was really celebrating that because when the lesson was so boring, everybody was saying, okay, Julia, gotta read out her story or something like that. And then I sat in front of class like reading and everybody having a blast because then lesson was over, kind of, because it was really long stories usually.
Yeah.
And written with a lot of humor and depth. So yeah, it's a good reminder. And it's definitely on my bucket list as well to write a book. But time flies, especially in Bali. Sometimes I wonder like, where are my days? What's going on?
I know.
Yeah. So speaking about Bali, I was at the spa the other day and we had an amazing conversation in the sauna with someone that we just met. And this guy said, Bali is a very...
Sorry.
No worries.
I'll forget it later.
Now everybody's awake because this is important. Listen, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing happens by accident.
So Bali is a good place to learn how to love yourself. And now that you said that this was part of your decision, right? Coming here was part of your decision, listening to your inner voice of love. How has Bali been treating you and teaching you about love? For me specifically, super healing to watch how local people interact with each other, with nature, with devotion, with ritual, with prayer, with what is alive, how they interact with life in general. It's super inspiring for me, and I'd love to listen to you.
So what is inspiring? Directly, is that the question? What is inspiring about Bali?
Yeah, or like specific things that you observe when watching locals and...
Well, definitely the locals part. Yeah, so I think, like when you come to Bali, if you only stay a few days, you might not catch on to it. If you only stick to the touristy places, you may not find this for your own experience. But if you plant yourself in Bali for long enough, a couple weeks, 4 weeks, and you might not do the typical vacation where you're like, I'm going to this club and this bar and what's the nightlife and like see the Eiffel Tower. We don't have that here, you know. There's a lot of beautiful beaches around the world. This isn't about the beaches. Yes, there are beautiful beaches here. It's really about the culture here. So you want to find a way to interact with the culture, go to their ceremonies, go to the fire dance. Ubud or north of Ubud has a lot of more village energy, so you'll get more local interactions. This culture is all about purification. You know, that's what it is. It's you go to the temples, the water temples, and purify. The water cleanses you, cleanse your thoughts, your you know, your mouth, your ears, all your senses, cleanse your heart, all these things. Mm-hmm. So it's all yogic. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a Balinese boy that was 17. 7 years ago, I was doing a retreat here, my first trip. And I was talking to him at the resort. He just happened to be there, and he'd never jumped in a swimming pool before. And he'd been in the rivers, and some of the water is contaminated. I don't know. I was just like, oh, you've never been in a swim. It was amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to him about yoga. And I was like, yeah, this is a yoga retreat. All these people are here doing yoga. And he's like, oh, I love yoga, he says. And I'm like, you're 17. I'm like, what do you love about yoga? Like, you love yoga? That's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah. I'm like, what do you like about yoga? What pose do you like? What's your favorite pose? And he got confused. He's like, did I not say that correctly? Maybe he didn't understand me. I'll say it again. You know, like this pose, like down dog. I start to do yoga in front of him. Here's the upward facing dog, and here's a down dog. And he looks at me like kind of confused, but he's like kind of settling into the question. And it clicks to him what I'm asking. And he goes, my favorite pose is sitting. Sitting. And I was just like, huh? Oh, that's right. Like sitting. So you're practicing yoga from a standpoint of maybe yamas or niyamas, or at least like karmic. How do I live my life? What are my actions representing? Cleansing. This is so beautiful to have that. So yoga is actually ingrained in this society, whether they show up to vinyasa yoga class or not. It's just part of who people are here. So there's a beautiful part about the culture. And then I think there's something interesting happening in the tectonic plates. And, you know, I'm not the person who knows the exact thing that's happening, but the geology of this area supposedly is more conducive for alignment. Mm-hmm. If the earth has chakras and has alignment potential within these chakras as a planet, mm-hmm. Bali is supposed to have more potential energy here mm-hmm. in that way. And the other part of it that's interesting is that there's a certain transmission of what's possible that happens all the time, everywhere, all the time. Like to a child, a lot of things are possible. And then we grow up and we're like, that's not possible. But for some reason, some people can still tap into the possibilities for them. Mm-hmm. Right? So each country, continent, city, each has its own field of possibilities as well, based off of the people who live there. And the tradition, how rich that history is. How many centuries does it go back? Did the country start 100 years ago, 1,000, a million? What was here before us? And so this country has a rich history of what's possible as well. So I think that is playing into the spiritual energy that a lot of people say they feel here mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
But you got to get quiet enough for it to be felt, because if you go distract yourself with your, my normal vacation, be like, let's go get this margarita here, and then we'll go take this, you know, hang out at this bar, you know, and then we'll go, you know, ski resort here, whatever it is, you know, it's all about doing stuff. But Bali's not about doing stuff. Mm-hmm. So get real quiet. Mm-hmm. So you do hear people saying, oh my gosh, it's too much for me in this Ubud place. I'm going to need to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's just a moment of like, it's uncomfortable to be quiet and just be for most people.
Yeah. 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 It's really not about doing. It's about being and we are human beings, not human doings. We might have heard that before. Yeah, that really hit my heart when you said, when you see people just sitting there. Like, I need to say, I am living in the, my little villa that I'm renting here is in the backyard of the Balinese family clan. So whenever I walk to my scooter to drive to yoga classes, I need to kind of walk through their home. It's very open. Yeah. And I tend to see what they are doing, how they're spending their days. And it feels very intimate because it's very open, everything. And it's really inspiring. And the other day, it might sound odd, but I just saw the father of the family just sitting there. He was just sitting. He was not meditating. He was not reading. He was not listening to anything. He was not and like not doing anything that you would actively do. He was just sitting there and looking so content. Mm-hmm. And I was so touched. You cannot imagine. I had like tears coming up in my eyes. I was like, why am I so touched by just seeing someone just sitting?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, throughout the whole scooter ride to my yoga class, I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, okay, I think I have never, ever seen somebody before just sitting. It's my third time on Bali already. And then I was thinking and tracing it back to also my family history. My mom is a doctor now, osteopath. My father is an engineer. They have always been very busy. And that's kind of the busy society, representing also the busy society that I've been growing up in. And I realized that, okay, yoga is like to slow down, but how about just sitting? And since I saw that, I started to sometimes just do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels so good. And I remember that whenever I did that in school, as a kid, I was sometimes actually doing that, coming home from school and just sitting to process.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw my parents like saying, oh, what are you doing? Like, okay, how about you do this now? Mm-hmm. How about you practice violin? Or how about you do your homework? Mm-hmm. How about you, like, we exercise or we go out or we play or whatever? And I think it's so important for us to just, to just be. And there's a lot of research about that, even that our brain needs these kind of blue faces, they are called.
Mm-hmm.
While sitting, waiting for a bus, for example, mm-hmm. you would... not text, but just process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to say mm-hmm. something about that too,
mm-hmm.
because to understand, to I think a lot of people might recognize, like, yeah, I know I'm too busy. I know I need to sit more. I can't, is their answer. Mm-hmm. Like, it's too hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not able to sit. It's uncomfortable. It's maybe painful. It's boring, whatever the language they want to use is. So to me, it's like to actually help somebody see further into that. I'm thinking of what you're talking about. And I'm like, if I was really at a certain stage in my life, I would need to hear this. Because of the Western mind, and my mind is a Western mind, living in the Eastern world now. For example, like gratitude, and thank you for this food. For example, the prayer you might say to whatever religion you grew up with before you go to bed. Just the casual, just thank you for that interaction that happens. And we're taught this as children, but the way I was taught it, and I know so many people like this, it wasn't a genuine, really feel that type of interaction. It was just like, yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks. I mean, I still witness it all the time within Westerners here. It's just part of their, comes out of their mouth, but it's not, there's not a real exchange there. It's just a verbal, and there might be like a fraction exchange by saying it, but it's not a fully realized exchange of energy of a thank you, of what the intention behind a thank you is. Goodbye means God, bye, something like that, right? So like the depth of our language, going back to language, is I'm goodbye, God. I'm giving, your God's blessing as you leave this conversation now. This is so deep to say goodbye,
mm-hmm.
right? So the Balinese culture goes back to their purification. So when you're emptying out your mind, your heart, your soul, like you're emptying out, cleansing so that you can sit.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's not uncomfortable to sit. It's just a natural byproduct to just sit and blend into like your surroundings in a way until it's time to do something again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just thought that was a point of like, purify. And then you let go, put down the phone. That is true. Like there are some wisdom and just like put your phone away an hour before you go to bed, right? Like you hear that, but you don't hear the spiritual reasons why. People talk about the brain and why. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not as motivated by the brain anymore. Mm-hmm. Like the brain is like, oh, okay. It's like a hack. I'm going to hack my brain. The shortcuts. There are no shortcuts in life. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here in life. So you have to experience life. Okay. Yeah. The shortcut is what got us in trouble. It's like suppress this emotion. The shortcut is let's not experience that. Let's go straight here. And then you push down the feeling of something. You don't truly experience the sadness or even the joy you don't experience. We push joy down all the time too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watch it happen every day. It's like people are so resistant to being joyous.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, because is it okay to be this happy around people? Like they're just not used to it. Like this is me. This is me. They identify with this vibration. And like they don't, if they go up here, it's like, who am I? I don't know who I am anymore.
Yeah. I relate. I'm laughing because I was just teaching a retreat called Wild Permission.
Yeah.
Speaking about a lot about that, giving each other permissions.
For, like,
yeah.
Just permission is just be yourself, whatever that
is. It's so funny that sometimes we really feel like we need permission from somebody else.
Yeah. We do.
Yeah. But speaking again about Balinese culture, it's just so profound. And I think we could do probably another full episode about that. Anyways, we are heading to class soon. So I just want to finish up with a little anecdote also that, and another question that I have for you.
Mm.
It's just touching me so much. You say it's about purification and so many other aspects that we have touched, about the listening, because today we have been speaking a lot about listening. I see that they listen with their eyes quite a lot, and they have this healthy curiosity that lingers around all the time. It's not a curiosity that is crossing boundaries, but it's like a curiosity that keeps them connected to their intuition, I have the feeling. And the other day, after yoga class, my shoes broke. And these are flip-flops that I've been wearing for 8 years, traveling the world. And I got a bit emotional, I need to say. Mm-hmm. I just realized in that moment how attached I was to these shoes. Mm-hmm. The sole was already really thin. And they're like from a surf shop, I don't know, years ago, I think in Canada, I bought them. And I just love them so much. And so they broke, but I already knew that they would break in Bali and would be their last trip. But anyways, so I was barefoot for maybe 2 or 3 days until I found shoes that kind of could do it for me in that moment. First time I walked through the backyard of our house here in Bali, barefoot, somebody in the family looked at me and said, "Oh, you barefoot?" I say, "Yes, my shoes broke." And the person said, "Now you can become like Balinese people, connected to Mama Bali."
Mm-hmm.
And it was touching me again so much. And I realized that I'm always storing so much tension in my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get enough foot massages. Like for me, like the place where I store most of my tension, for some people it's the jaw, for some people it's the shoulders. For me, it's really the feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized these 3 days walking barefoot was really quite good. And I was actually considering to stay barefoot until the rest of my trip. But I realized on the scooter, it's maybe a bit safer to have shoes in case of emergency when you need to put your feet down quickly. Speaking about that, how attentive they observe, like little changes, and then they just ask about it, you know? I think asking questions is very often connecting us to satya, to truth, asking in a way like, it was pretty non-intentional. It was not like in Germany, somebody would say, "Oh, you need to wear shoes," you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, "Oh, just observing. You don't wear shoes."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
As beautiful as the culture is here, I've been here long enough to know that there are, nowhere's perfect.
Yeah.
I will say that for the listeners who are like, "Well, Bali just sounds fucking great. You guys are like just living in paradise. Well, I can't go to Bali. Yeah, so I guess I'll just live in my misery." No, it's really just a learning process to see what really is different about the culture that I grew up with, what's working here, and also see what's not working here too.
Yeah.
And, you know, without going into what that is, you see certain things, you know, and you see, you recognize it because of the patterns you've seen already in your own life before. Yeah. So that's why we're able to pick up on the good things too, because we've seen those patterns too.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, just pointing that out. You can, and the thing about the barefoot thing is like, the cool part about the earth is that you can just think about the earth. You don't have to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it exists already. And if you can just think and feel and really embody ground and earth element, like you'll get more of your release from your feet too. Mm-hmm. Putting your feet on the literal ground is going to just make it even easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So last question before we end, probably we should do another episode at some point. I feel like I have way more things to ask you or to listen from what you're sharing. Thank you for that. So that's why we're going to head to class soon. I'm going to get to listen another 75 minutes. No, 90 minutes.
90 if I end on 90. Time. Which I will try.
Yeah. So my last question is if you could send out a push, it's quite a tongue twister, a push message to the world. So everybody gets this message on their phone delivered in the language that of the receiver and the language that they speak. So this short, like SMS style, you know, sometimes they have this if there is an earthquake or so going on, but imagine it would be something positive, hopefully, or I don't know, something empowering probably that you would like to share with the whole world right now. No pressure. Probably tomorrow you would send something completely different, but if you connect right now, to your universe of love, what would you like to share?
The message is the simple saying of addition by subtraction. Because we get stronger by letting go of things. That's the simple thing. To break that down, it just means you let go of that memory, that sad thing that happened. You finally come to terms with, I think we can all relate to it. Maybe we can't figure out how to do it in the moment. Some of us have figured that out better than others, but it happens over 10 years. You look back and you're like, oh, that's gone. Then you can look into that and be like, wow, I feel so differently about that now. I remember how hurt I was at that time. And now we feel more whole because we let it go. So there's just an example to help provide some evidence as to like addition by subtraction. Let go of something, you actually add more life to your life.
Mm, yeah. Beautiful. I once heard every loss is a gain. Would you agree to that?
Every loss can be a gain, I would say. Just because is a gain is not, it's definitive, but depends on the person's relationship with neutral. Because if they can't look at it like a gain, it just won't be a gain.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be also toxic spirituality, I feel like, if we state it like it is, then it's like you have to be happy, you know? Like you have to see it that way.
Right. Like, assuming that happiness is even the objective of what somebody really wants. And like the whole key is like, you know, as you witness the Balinese things, the next moment you have of feeling very connected and maybe even emotional about that thing, about the feet and the ground and or the man just sitting there, or for me, the little boy saying, sitting is his favorite thing, you know, is to not judge your own upbringing, but to find, if you are going to judge it favorably. Be like, I am grateful for the way I learned, you know, to be. And I also, if there's any resentment there towards somebody who might have kind of like, you could blame them, be like, my mom just did this. And yeah, learning how to go into that a bit and just be like, she was doing the best she could with what she had.
For sure.
Even if her actions were very hurtful. And I'm now able to see, thank you. You did your best. I love you, but I don't want to have anything to do with you. For example, that's okay too. You don't have to like, whoever that person is, like be like calling them every day. Like, hey, no, that's kind of, you know, artificial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Julia.
Yeah. Welcome. Let's go practice.
Yes. Let's do it.
Thanks, guys, for listening.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation at least as much as I did. And yeah, it's just so inspiring to talk to Byron. And guess what? It's not only inspiring to talk to him, it's also really empowering and beautiful to practice with him. So don't miss to check out his classes once you are in Bali. He just opened a yoga studio, Empowered Bali, in Canggu. You find him on Instagram, Byron de Marcy. I will place all the information about him into the show notes, so please check that out. And if you happen to stick around in Europe and you're inspired by what I have said about the Healing Heart Retreat, it is a beautiful retreat where we tap into the different aspects of the heart. We will tap into the playful heart with some acro yoga. We will tap into the emotional heart with a lot of sound release, vocal coaching, and all these kind of things. And there's going to be the intuitive heart and the expanded heart, where we are going to explore really a wonderful heart expansion with kirtan, ecstatic dance, and of course a lot of heart opening practices. So this is for you if you are currently working with your heart or with your voice or with your purpose. What is it, what you really, really want? And if maybe you have been going through a heartbreak or a loss, maybe if you have lost a baby or you have lost an important person through death or whatever, this is really your place to go. But also, if you are not necessarily suffering from any of the things that I said, but you're just interested in working with yourself, in being empowered, in getting to know yourself better, and then this is also really a perfect opportunity for you to grow. And I always like to say this even until the end of my classes, no matter where, with whom, and when, and what, just keep on practicing. I would love to be in touch with you. I would love to practice with you. And if you also feel the call or just want to be in touch, reach out on Instagram at upyoga. Check out my website, check out the offerings. There's online practices as well. I am so excited to hear from you. Just reach out, send me a message. I'd also love to know how you enjoyed the podcast. I'm open for feedback. Leave me a review. And if you want to hear more, just hit the subscribe button, I guess. Take care and listen to love.
Listen to your heart and listen to your body, hear what they say. Listen to your heart and listen to your body.